he's going to speak about differences in post-disaster mental health among Vietnamese and African Americans living in adjacent communities flooded by Katrina.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for coming to the session. In my talk, I'm going to be talking about two very different recovery trajectories of two different communities that experienced the same level of flooding after Hurricane Katrina, but had very different trajectories of recovery after that. My colleagues on the paper are Mingzhi Zhang, who's one of my doctoral students at Tulane University, Yunsu Park, who's on the faculty of the University of Illinois, and David Abramson at Columbia University. Our very wonderful collaborators and generous funders are on this slide for your perusal, but I want to leave as much time as possible for the end, so I'm going to move pretty quickly through the material. Half of the study that I'm going to be telling you about today had its origins before Katrina. My students and I were exploring some of the impacts of international migration on the health of a Vietnamese community out in New Orleans East, and just by chance, we happened to do a round of data collection just a few weeks before Katrina hit at the end of August 2005. Also by chance, a lot of the outcome measures that we had collected for that immigrant health study ended up being very well suited for a post-disaster study, which the original study soon morphed into. We came to call this transformed or second study the Katrina Impacts on Vietnamese Americans Living in New Orleans, or Katrina NOLA. So in addition to these data that we collected just a few weeks before Katrina, we've also followed this cohort at several points after Katrina just to see how they're doing at 1 year, 2 years, and 5 years after the disaster. And we're hoping to get some support to do a 10-year anniversary follow-up coming up soon. Compared with the results of other studies that are focusing on more mainstream populations, especially blacks and whites, we've been very impressed with how well the Vietnamese community is doing in post-Katrina New Orleans. Rates of return are much higher than they were for blacks or whites, and rates of PTSD, for example, are much lower than they were for blacks and whites that were living in communities that flooded at a similar level. We've been wondering a lot about whether these advantages that the Vietnamese have might have something to do with being Vietnamese, or might have more to do with the fact that they're living in a particular area of the city. In other words, it might have a lot more to do with how much they flooded, the level of damage that they had, or socioeconomic status. So to pursue this question, what we decided to do was to try to find some comparable data on some communities that were living very close to the Vietnamese community in New Orleans East. Just as in the previous presentation, the Vietnamese cluster very close together in New Orleans, you can see in this census map in the bottom right-hand corner that the Vietnamese enclave is very tightly clustered. It's marked with these red dots. I think it's 150 households. And you can also see that the communities surrounding that enclave are almost exclusively African American. As it turned out, my colleague at Columbia, David Abramson, was leading a completely unrelated study at the same time that collected a wave of data at the same time that we did, at about 2 years after Katrina. And he also, we were fortunate that one of his major outcome variables, the SF or short form 12, was also one of the variables that we were using for the Katrina NOLA study. Flooding from Katrina was widespread and very substantial in New Orleans East. This photo was taken just a few days after the levees broke, flooding the entire city from an airplane or a helicopter. And it's taken over the section of the city where both our Vietnamese and African American respondents live, out of New Orleans East. Damage was very substantial. This is a house in the middle of the Vietnamese community. It would have had floodwaters about a foot to 2 feet deep in the house for a number of days. At very, very hot temperatures. It was brackish water. Water came from the ocean, so all the wiring would have had to be replaced. The walls, ceilings would have all had to be ripped out. Car would have had to be replaced, and the roof would have had to have been repaired. The African-American households in the same area had exactly the same housing stock, exactly the same types of problems. So our research question for this part of the study is, how would two very different ethnic communities fare in their post-disaster recovery if they were contiguous, had similar housing stock, and also similar levels of socioeconomic status, levels of flooding and flood damage? To pursue this, the approach is essentially what I said before. We compare post-recovery outcomes for two distinct but adjacent communities that had the same level of flooding with the same measures assessed at the same time. The data we used for the African American sample comes from a study called the Gulf Coast Child and Family Health Study. The paper is uploaded at the website. We have a lot of details about the idiosyncrasies of the two different studies. In essence, the sampling frame for the Vietnamese was a community list that was maintained by the major non-government organizations, the main church that was serving the area. The sampling frame for the African-American study, the Gulf Coast study, was a list of displaced persons who ended up in FEMA-sponsored housing. Again, our principal measure of recovery in this case is the short form 12. Many of you have probably heard about the short form 36. A sort of much reduced version of that is the short form 12, which only has 12 items. And the item that we're particularly interested in is this mental component summary scale. We really like this scale because it allows us to assess the impact of our predictor variables on mental health at large within the community. In other words, we're not limited to the small number of people who would have expressed clinically relevant symptoms for PTSD or depression. We get everybody on this. And, of course, our major predictor of central interest is race or ethnicity. And sort of a related question is, if we do find a difference between these two communities with the same measures and assessed at the same time, we also want to know if that difference can be explained by compositional differences of the sample, socioeconomic status, race, age, sex, those sorts of things. As it turns out, there are pretty important and substantial compositional differences between these two samples. African Americans in our sample are much more likely to have some college education than the Vietnamese do. The Vietnamese American respondents, on the other hand, are slightly older, live in households that have more people in them, are more likely to be male, and are more likely to be married and employed than the African American household. So it's going to be very important for us to take these differences into account. When we do, we find that the Vietnamese American advantage in post-disaster mental health status is substantially higher than it is for African Americans. There's a 5-point difference. It's statistically significant, and it's not explained by these differences and these compositional differences that we were concerned about. Basically, what I just said. So, if these differences in post-recovery outcome are not explained by these compositional differences in the sample, what might explain them? In thinking about this, I've developed this very simple schematic to help me better understand some of these differences in disaster recovery across groups. I think a central reason why the Vietnamese have fared so well in the post-Katrina environment compared to other groups does actually have a lot to do with being Vietnamese. In other words, I think it has a lot to do with culture. But I don't think that culture could affect post-disaster recovery directly. It has to have some intermediary factors that it would work through. It seems to me that the best set of candidates for these intermediary factors through which culture might affect recovery would be the set of characteristics that a lot of disaster researchers are calling resilience. I really like how teams like those led by Fran Norris and Susan Cutter have pushed forward this concept of resilience recently in disaster research. Norris et al., for example, proposed four dimensions of community resilience related to economics, social ties, communications, and aptitude or competence. A culture might be implied in some of these attributes, but major frameworks of resilience, either this one or some of the other major ones, don't explicitly include a dimension of culture. I don't have a problem with that, because I doubt there's any such thing as a culture of resilience. Plus, if we assume that there is, then that takes us down a road where we value or privilege some cultures more than others, and that's a road that I don't think that we want to go down. But I do think that the fact that these frameworks of post-disaster recovery and resilience omit any treatment of culture whatsoever is a real problem in the literature. So I've been thinking a lot about what specific attributes of culture might be relevant to resilience and recovery, and I wanted to throw a few trial balloons by you. One potential attribute that I've been thinking about, I'm calling a history of overcoming adversity. The New Orleans Vietnamese community is a little unusual in the U.S. It's a northern community, had its roots in northern Vietnam. Being Catholic, when the communists took over the north, they fled. They were afraid of persecution, so they went to the south. There they stayed for about 20 years until South Vietnam collapsed in April of 1975, and they fled again. This time, probably all of you remember the horrific conditions that they experienced and getting on the boats or going through the jungle as they tried to leave South Vietnam. Regarding their most recent ordeal of Katrina, in many of my interviews when I talk to people about their experiences, they'll dismiss it as nothing. They'll say that it's nothing. Obviously, it wasn't nothing. The average property loss in this community was about $50,000. But compared to what they had experienced before, many of them did not see it as a significant whammy. For me, I'm starting to think that this cultural attribute that I'm calling overcoming adversity has more to do with a kind of collective self-confidence and faith, more so than the size or the level of impact of one hazard to another. And I think it has a lot to do with when you get through something as difficult as a protracted war and then having to reestablish oneself in a country that they knew little or nothing about, leaves the community with a sense of faith that they're going to be able to get through what other obstacles might be put in their path. While there's a lot of diversity in New Orleans Vietnamese community, many people gloss over it, including me, I think that this particular community also benefited from having a dominant faith, in this case it's Catholicism, a dominant church, in this case it was the Mary Queen of Vietnam Catholic Church, and then a dominant community leader. In this case, at that time, it was Father Vien Nguyen. Many of the other communities in New Orleans East and elsewhere did not have this kind of unifying features that gave them a sense of identity when it came time to pull themselves together. A third candidate that I've been thinking about for these cultural attributes is what I'm calling an entrepreneurial spirit. So this fellow I was interviewing in the right part of the photo really illustrates it. During the interview, I was asking about how he was faring with his contractors and insurance companies after Katrina. I was not faring very well and was kind of in a funk. So this guy was abused by them much worse than I was, except he was really on top of the world. He never expected to get anything, from his insurance company, from the from the government. He expected to be ripped off by his contractors. So rather than hiring them, they formed their own labor groups, used their own money to do most of the rebuilding. And then when the insurance companies did come through with their very meager, pennies on the dollar payout, rather than being upset with it, as I was, he saw it as a windfall. He wasn't expecting anything at all, and he decided to start a new business with it. He was also very happy about the opportunities that Katrina had presented for him and his family with the labor shortage. Wages went up a lot after Katrina, so he was working two jobs in addition to rebuilding his house, hardly sleeping at all, and he was very, very happy. I was so impressed by him, it lifted me out of my funk. The next candidate attribute is really related to the previous one. It has to do with expectations. I'm growing convinced that this group of Vietnamese immigrants, this generation of Vietnamese immigrants that came of age in Vietnam, presume that government and other corporations exist to exploit us, and all that you can rely upon in a time of crisis is yourself, your family, and your social network. In fact, I'd say that the Vietnamese have leveraged this characteristic very effectively in the post-Katrina landscape. Against all odds, when the city government and FEMA decided to put one of the most toxic dumps where they were putting all the horrible stuff that had flooded throughout New Orleans right next to their camp, they lobbied. They pulled themselves together, made protests, stood in front of the trucks, and in front of all odds, they shut down the landfill, made them close it, and had a major major community victory. Which brings me to my final proposed attribute, which is adaptability. This is a picture from the close to where the village where they came from in northern Vietnam, about 100 kilometers or so south of Hanoi. So just as their elders, the place is very famous for these cathedrals that incorporate a lot of features of French cathedral architecture and your Vietnamese East Asian flourishes. So just as their elders in northern Vietnam adapted the classic French cathedral style to their own purposes, Vietnamese New Orleanians seem to be adapting well to the post-Katrina landscape. One of the most findings that we've come across in our study of who's doing well among the Vietnamese in the post-Katrina environment is that the Vietnamese who are well-oriented, this is based on a measure of cultural, it's adaptation, I think, assimilation. It's a culture of whether they're bicultural, it's a measure of whether they're bicultural, more oriented towards being Vietnamese. Those who are bicultural in orientation, in other words, they have both American and Vietnamese friends, they like both types of food, and they're comfortable in both languages, they're the ones who did the best. Whereas those who are more traditional in orientation, speak only Vietnamese, hang out only with Vietnamese, did the worst. And therein, perhaps, lies the rub. Min Zhao and Carl Bankston, in their very famous Growing Up American volume that was based on this same community in the late 1990s, concluded that many characteristics of traditional Vietnamese culture are protective for the Vietnamese, and that's part of the reason why they're doing so well. I'm suggesting here that perhaps the most important traditional cultural attribute is an ability to adapt to challenging circumstances. Thank you.
Any questions for Mark? And then I wanted to open it up to the floor for the presenters to come up.
What was the measure that we used for the cultural adaptation?
I'll have to look it up for you. It's a Southeast Asian acculturation scale.
Okay.
The last name starts with an A, but I can give you the exact name afterwards.
Yep.
It's got those three dimensions that I mentioned. How much of your diet is more Vietnamese or American orientation? How many of your social contacts are either one? And then which language do you tend to use? Yes?
I guess, how did you define recovery then? I know you mentioned resilience, but if we're comparing recovery of two different groups, what's that?
David Abramson, who's one of my colleagues on it, has this really very well developed, he's a disaster researcher, and he has this very well developed instrument of how you measure recovery. The one that we're focusing on here is mental health. I'm interested in mental health per se, but for this particular measure, since it gets a good assessment for everybody, how big was the blow that you had in terms of your own kind of well-being? I think mental health, this SF-12, this mental health composite score, provides a good measure of that. I'm really interested in well-being, and this measure of overall mental health seems to capture it pretty well for me. And empirically, it actually works quite well. For the Vietnamese, almost everybody had a substantial slump, decline at the one-year assessment compared to where they were just before Katrina. And then by the second year, most of them had come back to the point where they were before Katrina, except for these folks that I was mentioning who were very Vietnamese in orientation. And there, I suspect it has to do with getting ripped off by contractors, not being able to communicate, with the powers that be, things like that. Yeah?
Just one other question, then, is because regarding the history of race, well as especially with the Vietnamese, that what they, I don't know if that was a factor, because there were two stages of Vietnamese refugees who came here, where first were the first that were more professional than the military. I don't know like how much of this is that representative, but then there was a second wave came later in years that were more not as literate or coming from more rural areas. You know, I wonder if that's a factor, but we're talking about also U.S. history where, you know, African Americans were actually brought here as slaves, you know, and have been here for many centuries, and then with the abolishment of slavery, you know, we also see the influx of Asian immigration. So, you know, I guess it's hard to see this as just a story of resilience, as also how is this compared to the history of racism in the U.S., which actually has a much more grounding.
Yeah. On the first point that you made is a very important one. The characteristics of the Vietnamese who came right after 1975 in the late 70s and early 80s and then afterwards are quite different. They're very different populations, you know, which I think is your point. I'm not too worried about that for this particular community because they established themselves soon after 1975. And you know, part of this is creation myth, but a lot of it's true, you know, that these were intact communities that actually picked up and left in 1954, you know, from this place Bui Chu in the north, and then settled, you know, kind of planted roots just outside of Saigon up until 1975. And then they picked up again, scattered somewhat, but then, you know, when the priest, you know, kind of said, hey, New Orleans, you know, actually looks, you know, a fair amount like, you know, like Vietnam, they reconstituted themselves there. So it's much more of an intact
subgroup you're talking about.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I would also argue that when the Vietnamese, and I know because I was in New Orleans at the time that the Vietnamese came in, that the Vietnamese faced a lot of the same kind of racial discrimination that African Americans in the South face on a regular basis, because they were primarily fishermen, and in Louisiana, South Louisiana particularly, is a big industry, and it's a very close-knit, predominantly white community that does the fishing, and they were very resentful of the Vietnamese. I have to say that their resilience, the Vietnamese community's resilience in dealing with that is, my experience has been that they have bounced back from everything, and as a New Orleanian native, to come back to my city recently and see in the middle of all the Cajun and Creole and all the New Orleans restaurants, you expect to see a tremendous number of really fantastic Vietnamese restaurants throughout the city. So they're contributing, and they're also melding into the craziness that is New Orleans.
So, I mean, you know, having spent some, you know, some time in New Orleans East, what is your impression, or what are your thoughts about why? You know that you know the East is not particularly poor. It's fairly functional. Families out there are doing fairly well, both blacks and Vietnamese. There aren't many whites. Why are the Vietnamese doing so well? You know, given that you know a lot of the other things are the same.
Well, I think part of it was they have that very tight knit community, and they came back as a group. They, as you say, traveled to ended up with us as a group, whereas the predominance of the people who were displaced from the black communities in the East were either middle class and upper class black professionals who had sort of moved out of their traditional neighborhoods, or the particularly impoverished neighborhoods of
I wanted to open up the forum to anyone who wanted to address any questions from the earlier presenters, Sela's work on hypertension and diabetes among Samoans and Tongans, Ranjita's presentation on metabolic syndrome and Asian Indian diaspora, and also Tina Kim's presentation on substance abuse in terms of Vietnamese and African Americans. Sorry, I don't mean that. In terms of substance abuse among Asian Pacific Island groups in LA.